You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost our mom and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue. Tin Can Phone.
Hit that time and I bounce back. Had us in the beanies, now snap back. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas and the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs. Close to really fast is messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas and the lions. Yeah, respect it, get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, I ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spare with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with you out. We all on cable talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Poppin' knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Blue went to work, tryna heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, tryna touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters and the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, coolin' ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bit. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bit. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bit. Mike, Blue, Queens.
Welcome to another episode of Tin Can Phone, Season 2. Super excited about it. Live for the people who are live, who are you all people, and you all people. And then later, people will be hearing this, and it'll be live to them, but in the past or something. But we are here in this current temporal moment as a part of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, which is super exciting, which the theme of this year's Vanport Mosaic Festival is housing, which we'll be talking about. And then using this cyborg technology, we'll see. Please invite everyone to June 6th at 5:30 p.m. Alberta House, following the festival, part of the 7th Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 20th through June 7th. A Place Called Home, past, present, and future of housing our communities, 5:30, free by donation. Info, link, Alberta House, formerly known as Saramon House, the address. Find it, go there. 27th. It's going to be super exciting. And even kind of have been talking to Laura about this particular year of programming about housing. And it's interesting, if you're in the room, which many of you are, these are all photos from particularly Alberta Street, Alberta neighborhood. And then for those of you who don't know, the Vanport floods occurred when Vanport, the housing place, During World War II, there were shipbuilders. And they needed temporary housing. And that housing washed away with a flood, which is why the Vanport Mosaic's namesake exists and why we're talking about housing at the 80th anniversary of the building of Vanport. So we're talking about on the building side right now. And we're excited, 80th. And so we're excited to particularly welcome Blue and Queez to talk about the nature of trying to find housing in the 21st century as a formerly incarcerated person.
Man.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
It is.
That's what we're doing.
It's good to be here. You introducing everybody, that's it?
I'm introducing, that's what I remember
that's
I said
the
before.
Introduction?
I was kicking it. It was like I'm the goalie and I kicked it back into the field.
All right.
And you're the center forward or side forward or Queez. You two figure it out.
Right. So I'm just glad to be here on Tin Can Phone with my guy, Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. and Queez Audi, Misfit Audi. And we're going to have a special one tonight.
Yes, you got it.
We got Shalimar. We're in her business that she started. It's beautiful. They make smoothies like you wouldn't believe.
Yes.
It's delicious and feels good in here. So we're glad to join her and have her join us. And it's going to be rad. Also, I don't know if this is Shalimar's to talk about a little bit, but she hires people here who've come out of an incarceral context and sort of create space for people to work at jobs that they don't hate, which is a big thing that we sometimes talk about. So that's beautiful.
I love it. Thank you. It's like you wear too many hats, you know?
I do.
Queez, you want to introduce yourself to everyone? There's a bunch of people here. And if you weren't plugged in like a cyborg, I would spin the camera around maybe at the end.
We'll check it out.
But he can't see them.
Oh, he can't see them. Yeah.
Hey, I can't see it, but I know I'm near though. So you know what I'm saying? I know I'm near. So you know what I'm saying? It's Misfit, man. It's the Audi. I'm living it. You know what I'm saying? I'm living exactly what we talking about today. So I'm interested to see thoughts here. What Blue got to say? And you know, just give feedback because, like I said, I'm really living it right now, dealing with this housing and dealing with understanding that right now I'm still my record and figuring out how to move through society as that, but also continuously proving that I'm more than that, which is another Tin Can Phone Blue Art Gallery project, More Than One Man. I'm living that right now also. So yeah, I'm interested to dive into it and kind of break down how those two are existing together and still prospering at the same time, misfit.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up because I want to say this happened between episodes and would be relevant, I know, for at least listeners here to talk about where, what region you're living in now and whether or not it's dangerous there.
Yeah, man, I'm in the trenches, man. I'm gonna keep it 100. I'm in the trenches, but you know, I'm comfortable in the jungle though. But like, yeah, you know, but look, yeah, I just be moving around, Mike. You know, I just be moving around, and I'll be back in a minute. I'll be back in a minute. But also, yeah, just due to certain circumstances, I'm in a treacherous situation, you know what I'm saying? I'm up the street from the guys, but I'm located in the cut though, you know what I'm saying? So, you know.
Yeah. Again, it's interesting. On the prior episode, we had a guest who identified as Robert, who was a pseudonym for them. And so this is an interesting format where sometimes the things that we're talking about, it's not okay for the things we're talking about to be recorded. Or to be broadcasting them, or to be broadcasting them at a certain time. So I think that has something to do with Queez's vagueness.
Yeah.
Without identifying anything other than that, I mean, last conversation I had on the phone with Queez was about how Queez had lost some close friends. So that is kind of like, currently Queez is living adjacent to these things. So yeah. Part of that is also trying to, as Queez mentioned, for those of you who haven't listened to our entire archive, the project More Than One Man refers to a set of drawings I did of him wearing his prison blues, wearing kind of like his work attire, and then holding his daughter, these kind of like different selves that get collapsed into, or not collapsed into, what Queez appears as.
Yeah, rest in peace to everybody who suffered, who lost loved ones, and my condolences to all the families of the Sacramento mass shooting. It was a couple of my partners who lost their lives that night, and even on top of that, like, I think it was probably like a week after that, another one of my friends lost his life. It's just, you know, like, I think it was testament for me to like really figure out, you know what I'm saying, like which way I was gonna go, because everything that happened was a thing that could cause me to relapse. And if you pay attention to Tin Can Phone, you follow Tin Can Phone, you know when I speak on relapse, I don't speak on drugs, I speak on street activities, because that was my addiction. So everything that happened was a chance for me to relapse and go back to, you know, the mindset of what I know best. It hurt, but at the same time, I had to realize that when you choose, and it's horrible, but when you choose a certain life, you know, this is the outcome. They tell you this your whole life, that the two outcomes is prison and death, you know what I'm saying? So I just feel like, you know, we seen prison, that was the outcome for me. And then understanding I could have went and, you know, got guns and rode and, you know, did what I did in their name and probably just died or went to prison for life, you know what I'm saying? So it was a real test for me to know that, you know, I was on a different path and that there was a greater mission at hand. The guys at the mass shooting wasn't super close to me. They were just, you know, associate. Like, they was some of my friends, close friends, but the second death was one of my close friends.
I know that partially moving away from that is a thing. And then also moving closer to your first child, is that another kind of component of what relocation means for you?
Yeah, for sure. I'm gonna most definitely have my baby back. Yeah, like, so, you know, something, so this is one of the things about prison, right? It helps you, one of the things about prison is it helps you detach. So in certain situations, you have to be able to detach. And a lot of people who has never been in that place could never imagine or do that, right? So not saying that I have detached emotionally from my daughter, it's just the fact that I had to detach from that situation because I knew it was time that was going to be needed in order to get back to the place that I needed to be. You know what I'm saying? And that's exactly how it's playing out, exactly how it was supposed to. So I had to detach from the situation and everything that came with that because, you know, Mike, I'm a 0 to 100 type of guy. I don't really have no chill. I don't really have no in the middle. It's either all the way cool or it's all the way up, you know? So I had to detach. And then now we finna bounce back and it's a great situation. Yeah, it's hard though, because I still try to speak to the youth. You know what I'm saying? I still try to talk to the dudes who's, you know, really in the midst of all this, you know, in the jungle. And it's hard when they experience loss like that and me try to tell them, be cool or don't do this or, you know, this is going to be the outcome of this when their life is already dedicated to dying. You know what I'm saying? When you choose that path and you really dedicate to that. So, like, I was talking to my partner and I was just like, dang, it's crazy that I feel ashamed of living. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, all my homies be dying, but not that they die physically, it's just mentally they prepare, like they like are ready to. And right. And when I talk to them, you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the only thing that really matters. Like, that's the only thing that really matters to our youth right now is just like, it's scary to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's scary because like my grandma, my aunties, and like, they're not scared of nobody else. They scared of the people like me. They scared of the people that look like they son, they grandbaby. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, dang, like it hits harder when it's coming from my community and it's my little dudes that they talking about, which is why I, you know, try so hard because it's like, it's self-hate at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? It's self-hate because we only killing ourselves off. We only killing off the ones that look like us. We're not, you know? So it's like, I try to, it's hard though, because they losing people that's really, really, really close to them. I've been gone. I was incarcerated for 10 years. So I was gone. You know what I'm saying? So again, I was able to detach, but they're close to them. And I'm trying to tell them not to avenge their friend or not to do this or not to do that. And just play the balance, but also let them understand that I actually been there. And, you know, like I said, it's the two endings, it's prison or death. And I went to prison. Shout my mentor, Rob Richardson. He told me I've done everything in the streets but died. And he woke me up with that. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you think about it, like, I really did everything in the streets but died. So just this make a change thing is, you know, like, them losses is real for me. And, you know, it's hard to walk away. I ain't gonna cap. It's hard to walk away. It's hard to not do the things that I was raised to do, but also dealing with trauma, healing from trauma, and understanding that, you know, I can't use those tools, Mike. You know, the tools we always talk about that we gotta shed. When we speak on the snakes, I can't use those tools. Those tools can't exist no more. So, you know, it's hard though, because I feel like I'm letting down the nation. I feel like I'm letting down, you know, everything that I was once taught, everything that I was once stood on, everything that, you know, like I said before, the heart that got me here is the same heart that I got to leave now. You know what I'm saying? Like, this the heart that got me through the jungle. This the heart that got me to this place. This the heart that got me to be who I am. But now it's like I gotta leave that heart behind and become a different person type situation. And, you know, so just balancing that and then doing the right thing. The right thing is hard, you know what I'm saying? Housing, like trying to jobs, like, yeah. Yeah, it's hard. I ain't going back.
Yeah. So something I just want to name in the kind of classic Tin Can Phone fashion is, like, there's some intense nuances there. So everyone's like, oh, wow, maybe the first time I really hear someone talk about this is like their personal experience. And then we have statistical information where we know, you know, if you're born in a certain zip code. And so here you have someone talking about how it's almost impossible to leave, but the mindset being there is you don't know any other life other than that. And then also there's the hurdles of like, where do you go and what do you do when you get there? And so all that to say, maybe this is a perfect time in drink flow to introduce our guest, Shalimar, coming on. So we are currently in a venue that is their business, Holy Beans. Welcome, join us. Thank you. Shalimar, please. Please, Shalimar.
How you doing?
And so I guess just to get started, I mean, I guess you can feel free to like plug yourself, your business, but then also talk a little bit about how you find yourself here and where and why and all those things?
Oh, it's been a journey. So, I mean, obviously I have this business, but it didn't start off like this. I like you have said, I've done everything in the streets I could possibly do except for die. And then I was incarcerated for 2 years. And so when I got out, it was, people don't talk about the things that do change. Like 2 years doesn't seem a lot, but when I went in, there was no self-checkout. And when I got out, there was self-checkout, but who, right. where is there a vulnerable space for me to say, hey, I don't know how to do this. And this is why. I wasn't addicted to drugs, but I was definitely addicted to money and the lifestyle. And so I know how to go sell dope, but they said, you're going to go do these AA and NA classes. What am I going to do there? My mom was a crackhead. I don't do drugs. And so now I sit at tables with senators and we talk about, okay, well, why did you guys put me in a budgeting class? Why did you put me in this AA group, which I learned a lot of things and probably was traumatized by a lot of things too. But I know I can go sell dope, but now you want me to live paycheck to paycheck and budget my money? I don't know how to do that. I know how to get paid every single day. So what does that even look like? And so it took me a long time to figure that out. Working at McDonald's, working at Taco Bell.
Now you're working at your own business.
Right.
We're here. Yes. Please, you're on this giant TV. Shalimar owns this giant TV.
But it took me a long time to hear a lot of no's. A lot of, we would hire you. Wait, you're a felon. You talk proper. Like, but what does a felon look like? Who was a felon? Who are we? Not a unicorn. Like, there's so many more of me. And so now I just really use my voice of, how can we set people up to succeed? What are you guys not doing? Because clearly it's not working. And then what if I, you know how many times I couldn't get a job and I know I can go sell some dope and make my rent money. But if I would have got caught and I get a PV and I go back and they're going to say, well, she went back. Well, what are you doing to set me up to succeed? Like, what resources are you giving me? And so now I have Holy Beans and I have 5 employees who one might be on our way to prison. One just got out. 2 are in inpatient treatment. So I literally have this whole range of these women from the age 60 down to 23 who are fighting for their lives. And I don't mean just like fighting for their lives with substance abuse, but to stay free and to stay sober, you're fighting for your life. Mm-hmm. And so, this is super exciting. I'm so excited that you guys are here. Yeah. I've just dedicated my whole life to living my life bigger than myself and trying to bridge that gap for people, because there are so many people like me, and a person can only take no so many times before they're like, okay, what's up? Oh, can I cuss?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Before they're, you know, I mean, then they're like, what's the point? If nobody's going to help me and nobody wants to help me, what's the point of doing the right thing? Because doing the right thing is hard. It's so hard.
I was just wondering, when did you lose the mindset of, I could just go sell dope though? Or did you, it seems like to me that, for me, that's that, I go back to what I know best mindset. And I've always called that a failure's mindset, because we just waiting for the right opportunity to go back to what we know best. So in order for you to push to where you are now, I'm wondering, when was it that you lost that mindset and, you know, got that entrepreneur mindset?
So I would say when I became a mom, I think because I didn't have parents. And so when I became a mom, it was like, one, I was scared because I never had a parent. So am I capable of loving this kid? Am I capable of nurturing him? But then also knowing what it felt like to never have my parents. And so I made a promise to him that he would never be without his mom. So a lot of times people are just like, well, you work so hard and you got an education. And no, I had this baby, because me and this baby had been homeless. I've been jobless. I've been, hey, I can't come to work. And then I lose my job because I have him. So ultimately it was my son for sure.
How long after or before your incarceration was your son born?
So I got out. I got out in October 2008. He was born December 2009.
Okay, so it was all around the same time of you coming home, having him, and you was able to, it was just a trickle effect after that.
But it was hard. It was definitely like, I would say it's like a constant decision that I had to make for the first couple years of like not having a car and being on the bus with this newborn. And then I got my associates and I still was working for people that I was more educated than. So really having to humble myself. So it definitely was a decision that I had to make over and over again, but my son definitely saved me for sure.
Yeah. I was going to ask what kind of housing did you pull into?
Oh, I went to a halfway house. So I ended up having to go downtown to the Y, and I was there for think 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting this little crappy apartment finally. And it was, I only got the apartment because it was one of my mom's friends. It was like, I remember you growing up. And so I got that apartment and I stayed there. I did telemarketing for you or a long time, McDonald's, but it was hard. It took me, I would say, a good solid 10 years of being out to have my career, have a 401k, have a job, have car insurance, literally just to say that, hey, I'm not struggling. And, but it did take me a good 10 years to be out. For sure.
Feels like that, like friend hookup, you know, or that person who knows somebody that knows somebody or owns a private home is like the route for so many people when it's like, this person can see me outside of the sort of the bureaucracy and the, the system that feels like it's set up to tell you like, no,
the right? box.
Some places are even an automatic no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then maybe there's an appeal. And maybe there isn't.
Yeah, it's the whole hustle around like, don't go to a property management company. Fine, hey, and then you have your felony friend, your friends that are felons. So like, who's your landlord? Who do you go to? And it's like, it's this, but you shouldn't have to do that. Like if I'm working and I can show you this is who I am and this is my stable life, why should I have to jump through and waste my good energy on jumping through these hoops on trying to find housing for me and my child?
Yeah. I knew a guy who had to come up with a $5,000 deposit on like an $1,100. Like, I mean, I don't know how long it was before I had $1,000 period.
Yeah.
And just like having any money, like I think I came out with $600 and that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty good for, unless you had an industries job, you know, working for, you know, the garment factory or something.
Yeah.
And some of those guys and humans come out with a lot of money, but
yeah.
I think for, or a lot of money for us. And I think that it's funny that one of the things you said is like, I came out, I didn't, there was no, you know, self-check.
No.
All those things I think about all the time, like the, just like figuring out like how to get anything, like a smartphone.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have a smartphone.
I had a flip phone when I went in, like one of the little blue Nokia T-Mobile ones, and I got out and it was like, it was different.
A smartphone. And those are just like little obstacles. And
yeah.
And sometimes I think about like some of the privileges I had growing up that peers didn't have, or skills, and how do you navigate this stuff? Like, what if English is your second language? You know, like all these different things that are like stacked against a lot of people,
yeah.
And the struggles that I have are real. Like finding a place, like my place is not like the best still,
right?
You know, still. And it's beautiful for me, and that's also another blessing of like being on the inside, is like you learn to wipe tables and clean bathrooms. There's no job beneath you, you know.
Yeah,
like you're willing to work hard, and then you're like out here and you're like, look, I got these skills, and who's gonna see me? No
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Well, even
and then yes,
at like, Coffee Creek.
I got a good job.
Yeah, at Coffee Creek there's the coffee cart where the women that work there, they have to have a minimum of 5 years, and they set them up, and you've got barista experience, and you're going to do all this work, and you're going to out, and who's going to hire them? Not Starbucks and Dutch Brothers. And so again, we're setting them up to fail and for disappointment. And so now a lot of the girls that I mentor, they're getting out, go get a job, go get housing. Everything's online. These women have been in there for like 6, 7 years, even 10 years. They can't do an online resume. They don't have internet access. How do they use a laptop? Like what, how are you guys exposing them?
And
so, yeah, it's online. Everything is online. And so what are they supposed to do? How do they do that? They're not teaching them that. And so, I mean, they have basic computer classes in there, but who is walking them through this? And so that's how I spend my life now every day.
I mean, that's a super interesting nuance. Like just everything is made digital or with an app, like for convenience for the normie folks who can like benefit from that convenience. And that, you know, I think I was in DC and when someone was referring to a thing like unmapping, where it's like none of the Black businesses are on the Google map. And so you don't go there. And so it's like meant to be easy. Like, oh, what am I going to have for dinner? And similarly, it's like, oh, I need to buy a house. Let me get on Zoodle or whatever. And people get out of jail. They're like, oh, like my flip phone doesn't work anymore. So it's just not designed for someone to succeed. And actually recently someone was using my phone to fix their phone because they like try to switch their number or whatever. It was like multiple hours of like, I'll call you back. And like, I just, you know, and they were like really upset about it. And they like felt bad about themselves. And I was like, this happens. Like sometimes it's hard for people to do that. Like, you know, anyone who called that number is going to get screwed. But like, you know, when you don't even have someone who could borrow their cell phone or stuff like that, you know, network. And so again, like thinking about relocating, and Queez was talking about relocating, it's like, you're not even able to scan the top tier choices.
No.
You know, and then, you know, and that's not how we perpetuate the stuff. Again, it's like, this is why we want to be talking to senators. This is why we want to talk to mayors. It's like, if you're not sealing the bottom of the thing that's spilling out of the bottom, then you're like, all right, you're back in the top. And like, yeah, you just spill out of the bottom again. I mean, that's the thing that's really absurd. That's how I find this work. It's like, I don't know how to watch it just keep spilling. I was like, no, it's a slow leak.
When even if you have somebody who says yes to you, having first month and last month and sure, all that, like in the beginning, especially, and we both went to places that were like supportive housing,
yeah, you
know, designed to help people come out. But I was there for a long time, even getting a bank account. I mean, these are all linked to like housing. It was
hard to get an ID.
And then when I did get a bank account, they wouldn't even give me a checking account. They gave me a savings account. Hmm. And I couldn't buy anything off Amazon, mm-hmm, or the internet or whatever, right? Like, yeah, that's
a what big, does that even mean? Like, what is that?
It means
like, why would like,
you
like,
can't do stuff.
We don't believe you can check, but you can save.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Like I dressed up real nice, like after being told no, like four times and having direct deposit from my job, and
right,
put on a tie and went in there and I was like, hey, give me a checking account. Like, okay. And I got one and I was like, all right, that worked. You know, all I had to do is put on some nice clothes. But I mean, it's wild. Like people don't think about not being able to get stuff when the world has changed so much and you're trying to access stuff and you don't have a car to go get things.
Mm-hmm.
Your place, I mean, money is hard to save and a lot of places don't want you. They don't want the idea of you.
Yeah.
And don't even want to take the time to like talk to you. So one thing I found, and the way that I found my place, was through an app. It was called Roomster and it's just regular people. And I found the people of Portland, for at least me, and that doesn't mean everybody, but I told my story. I introduced myself first, who I am and what I do. And then when they got back to me, I shared, hey, this is this thing that I experienced. And what do you think? And actually people were kind of open to it. It's pretty wild. But it took a long time. And I think Queez, one time we were talking about the obstacles we put in our own way versus the obstacles that are actually there in society. Like, yeah, how many times do we opt out from asking just because we know or we believe somebody's going to say no?
A lot.
But in housing, like, it's pretty real. It's a real obstacle.
I ain't going to cap. I'm to the point, just from experience and past experiences, like, I'm to the point where I'm just like, don't even put my name on that. You know what I'm saying? Like just, you feel me? Put you, you feel me? Like, and then we could get me in, add me on a couple months later. You know, I just figured out the swivs though. Because you get told no so many times where it's like, you know, it's always other people involved. You know what I'm saying? So like, I got, not in my previous situation right now, but just every situation prior, it's been just her. You feel me? Like, I know because of my record, I never even tried no car in my name. We not even gonna put my name on the spot. We not, nothing me attached to nothing, because I don't know if it's the trauma of violations or, but like, I've just always like, I don't want my name on that because my PO gonna know where it's at. He gonna be able to just pop up on me. He gonna, you feel me? Like, so with that trauma, like, I tried to do it right before, you know what I'm saying? Like, huh, here go the address I'm at, this how I'm moving, and you still violate me, you know what I'm saying? So like, once you do that, you know, so that's just one thing though. Like, we're not putting my name on nothing right now. You know, my load, you feel me, it's in my name, everything in my name and stuff, and I still trip.
Man, we got art, we got shoes, we got
somebody selling something. Get your cell on, hustling. But like, you know, I'm just now realizing, and I think it's a song, it might have been Big Timers or somebody, put everything in my mama's name. You know what I'm saying? Like, we was promoted to, like, you know, don't have nothing in our name, but I'm realizing credit. I figured out credit, you know what I'm saying, and how that work and how you can like build yourself on paper. See, so for some reason, it's about, I like changing narratives. I like changing minds, right? Because if you could change somebody's mind, you could change their life. You could change the way they live. So sometimes I always find myself in difficult situations dealing with like just certain jobs, like the job I'm at now. Like, I came in there, me, they got quizzed from the very beginning. And but I told them, you giving me this job, you not just giving me a job, you saving my life. I said, because I done put in applications before this and everybody said no. So if you say no, it's back to the streets for me. I ain't gonna lie. And I told the hiring person that I ain't gonna lie to you. You say no, it's over with for me, because I done did everything I can. I said, for you save my life though, you give me this job, I'm gonna work hard. I bet you I work harder than anybody in this shop. And within 30 days, I had a promotion. You know what I'm saying? Machine operator. And I've been rocking that for a little bit, for over a year now. But that don't work for everybody. Like, I just know that my work ethic is going to carry more weight than my record. I know that my personality, everybody don't have that either, though. But I'm going to go in there, I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to change the mood of the whole room. And when I talk to you, you see, so communication is really key, especially when you understand that you are your record. It's going to come out. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to come out. So for me, presentation is everything. You know what you're eating, but the way y'all Kenny wrapped up, he's just like, man, I gotta have that. You see how it's wrapped up? Rapping is everything. Presentation is everything. The problem is we go in with a loser's mindset, like, I ain't gonna get it. So I go in there with an attitude. I kind of go, I might not shave my face, or I ain't gonna get it anyway. You know what I'm saying? But like, you may could go talk yourself into some things. Like, I done talk myself into some things, and I done talk myself out of some things too. You know what I'm saying? So I just realized, like, I told me and Mike had a debate, and I call cap when people say that they can't do something because of their record, because I just know business owners and, you know, man, being one, like, I got homeboys that did time, felons, they business owners, they having spots. So once you see it, once you a witness, I can't act like I don't see it. Like, before, I didn't see it. Before, it was just like, damn, everybody keeps saying no, they all the homies. But then I start realizing the homies ain't even trying for real. They lying. The homies, I'm being fooled for being a follower. Let me just go try real quick. And for me, I'm blessed because everything has fell into position for me the way that it should. It was hard work. Like she said, it was hard work. But being resistant, being down, staying down, like, it has fallen into position for me. And that don't be the case for everybody. But as far as housing go, it's so hard. Like, I'm terrified to put my name on anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I don't know. It's like trauma. It's PTSD. Like, I think they're going to work with the people. They police might, you know, it could be all type of thoughts that run through people's head, but just them saying no so much. And then, okay, they do give us the spot. Now we the spot that, you know, even at my job one time, somebody came up missing, like their stuff came up missing. It was instantly like, quiz. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, hold on, bro. Like, for one, I ain't going to steal. You know what I'm saying? Like, if anything, I'm going to take it. Like, in your face, I'm going to take it. I ain't going to steal though. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because I had this on me, but then the manager tried to come like, well, you know, you have been to prison, but not for stealing. I didn't go for stealing. You know what I'm saying? But understanding that it's always going to be that, like, when you have your record, you're always going to be the one that the finger's pointed at. So presentation, again, the way you present yourself is going to, you know, it has to outweigh the record. You know what I'm saying? It has to outweigh your record. And you could get a chance, like,
those people, Queez, right? You connected with that person who you were talking to and sharing your story with. Mm-hmm. And those people you're talking about who are, like, business owners, like Shalimar. Mm-hmm. I actually am now a business owner. But it's like, that's the route, right? Like, if you mm-hmm. can't connect with a person and have them be like, see you, if it's a part of this giant system. I mean, I have these guys, Kirk Charlton, who was on the show last time, remember, tell him, come take a job with the county.
Yeah.
Come take a job. And then, oh yeah, we were just kidding. Don't take a job with us. We won't take you.
But Blue, we brainwashed though. We brainwashed. We coming in with the mindset that we can't do nothing. Because of the great American stories and because of the great prison warriors, we believe that we really can't do nothing, and then we don't try. A high percentage of people don't try, bro. And then they blame every system and they blame everybody that they can. You know what I'm saying? So I always have to play devil's advocate and call cap on the things that I see. People just, you know, when you believe in that, like, you don't try, bro. And then you just, you know, that cycle, we in love with the cycle, and the rappers is just making it even better. Like, we in love with the cycle. Nobody wants to be different, my guy. Like, nobody wants to step outside, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody want to look like they rich, but nobody want to put in the work to get rich, you know what I'm saying? And to me, ownership is the only path to freedom. Yeah, no, you know you are photo shoot fresh. You know, yeah, you photo shoot fresh, man.
All the time.
Yes.
You know, Queez brings up a lot of interesting points, and I love the kind of reference to that song. I can't remember, Big Timers. But, you know, it's like cultural. It's like culturally ingrained. Yeah. It's not even just something that's happening. It's like reinforced as the way in which to move forward. Mm-hmm. So again, it keeps everyone like circulating the same kind of scenario. And as Queez mentioned, like, you know, not, you have no paper trail, you can't get a loan, you can't build your credit, then you can't. And it's like, talk about having kids. Like, I mean, we've had guests on the show who are like, I got kids, I can't get a house with the record, or like, you know, these other things. But then something else that came up, I thought was really interesting. Also bringing up Kirk Charlton, I was just on the phone with Kirk Charlton, and he's like, okay, I'm trying to get a grant. And I'm like, cool, let's get you a grant. He's got a great idea, $1 million idea, literally. He's got the work ethic of Queez. He's ready to go. And he's like, so yeah, like, I need to like pay off my car tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, that's not how grants work. and, you know, and he's like, you know, people are ready to endorse him, but he's like, yeah, they told me this one. And I was looking up, I was like, when's the deadline? He's like, I don't know. You know, so it's like, there's not, even in your like the culture, the accessibility, the paper trail, all the things. And then when you're really ready though, you're dressed, you can dress nice, you got the skills, you're ready to talk the talk, you can woo someone, but then it's like, all right, like then you plop the big book, like figure out how to do this for dummies, you know? So when Queez was talking, I was also thinking, so now you live in Vancouver for the school systems. Mm-hmm. So I'm interpreting that as like you're at the top of the choice. You are making—
Well, one, it's cost effective to live in Vancouver. Mm. And well, the rent's starting to go up because, well, we can't live in Northeast anymore because nobody can afford it.
Right.
So where my only choice was now, I mean, because the schools I want him to go to, Fobby and Vernon, they're all centrally in Northeast. So now I am in Vancouver, one, where it's more cost effective and there are a lot more private owners in there. And me being out, I've been out for almost 14, this year will be 14 years. And I still, when I get a place, I will stay in that place for as long as I can because I don't want to check the box. Right. I don't want to check the box. I don't want to have to explain, hey, this happened 10 years ago and this is what I did. Like, who wants to do that? And you still have to do that. And so kind of piggybacking off of what you were saying, though, about how people need to have the confidence, they need to show up, hey, I can do this. But if you think about it, I mean, there were many times where I showed up like that and nobody opened the door for me, or it was still like I checked the box and I didn't get an interview. And so now when like I have a lot of small businesses that come in here and there's these suit and tie white guys and they're like, you know, well, I don't hire felons. And okay, well, you don't have to. And I'm not telling you, I'm not forcing you to, but the person that just made your drink is a felon. The person that just made your drink over here smoked crack 60 days ago. So you may not want to, but these are, you're contributing now to helping their life along the way. So the only thing I will encourage you to do is when you do get somebody that texts them, interview them, let them feel human, let them feel like they're being heard. Yes. You may not need to, but at least let them feel validated so that they know that they can keep that confidence and go apply and check the next box. Yes. So those are the conversations that I do have. You don't have to hire them. However, you just contributed to helping somebody fight for their kids. The lady that you're talking to that you like and she's so sweet, she's a felon.
Mm-hmm.
All the thing in terms of recognizing these systemic things that have already especially affected people of color trying to find spaces to live, but are supposedly protected, right? Those things are actually supposedly not allowed to discriminate against a person and say, you can't be here because you're Black, or you can't be here because of this. And yet to be a felon is 100% okay to tell somebody you can't be here. Mm-hmm. It's not a protected class. So you add that, but that's a big deal. Like, sure. I mean, somebody can just, they don't have to tell you a reason. And if you want a reason, they can tell you. So I just think that that's like a part of that system and that real life stuff that, I mean, it affects a lot of people every day through prejudice, but through, this is like sanctioned prejudice.
Yeah.
This is like saying, I'm beyond the sanctioned systemic nonsense that we all know exists all the time. This is like on the books. Yep, still okay.
And there's no incentive for it to change except for the fact that you get tax credit for having a certain amount of felons work for you. There's a quota.
You can get if they're employed with you for a certain number of months, you can have.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, those are good things. I don't think they're usually
Right. I mean, something you're seeing, Shalimar, about like just give the interview, it's like, it's also building the skills, right? Mm-hmm. So like, you don't actually have to offer the opportunity, especially, you know, it's like, oh, actually, I don't think you're qualified for this job. That's not setting them up for success. But like talking to them and letting them have that conversation, like letting out the steam, the anxiety, is actually skill building, you know. So it actually, again, starts to pave the way in a direction where they can actually figure it out for themselves.
Right.
But something else you said was really interesting, because, you know, you said, oh, we can't get a job around here. So for those of you in the nebulous, like we're just in your headphones, we are currently, Holy Beans in Northeast Portland. It is on Alberta in the Albina district, which Ree and Laura's going to love this. Essentially, when the Vanport flood happened, because of restricted covenants, all the Black folks and Chinese American folks and Indigenous folks couldn't get housing anywhere else in Portland. And so Northeast Portland is where they had to go, which is what created the Albina district, which was destabilized a number of ways, including building I-5, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and again, the thing that's wild to me is like, so yeah, it's like, oh, well, we have this tax credit. It's like, not only do you have to be business savvy enough to do it, but you also have to be maybe resilient enough actually to like handle that kind of employee. And so it's interesting in the context in the business we're in right now. And it's like, you're like, oh yeah, these are my employees. Someone might be going to jail. Someone just got out of jail. You know, you're really actually doing the extra work even to have them as an employee. Mm-hmm. And so when we say it's like incentivized, it's a vague fiscal incentive. And it's funny because people talk to me, they're like, oh, the work you do is amazing. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you could too. They're like, no, I could never. And I'm like, I didn't do anything special, actually. I just kept showing up. And so I think those things are really fascinating because, you know, when we're like, oh, yeah, there's houselessness, there's crime. What are we going to do? It's like, keep giving someone a sandwich. But every day, you can't stop, because if you do, then it gets up, you know? So, yeah, I mean, this conversation is really interesting, not just in all of the nuances, but also like the literal geography of the place we are. I mean, normally we're all in our living rooms on Zoom recording this, but in this moment we're in like, you know, a Black business return to this district, but, and in the specific context of this show, you know, with totally within an incarcerated context, but you're also in an interesting way. I think you're senior to all the guys on the show at 14 years out. And so I know that they're both still working to, like, when you, I mean, and that's what I was gonna say before, is like, my housing is precarious. You know what I mean? I don't have no 401k. I'm a month to month, you have a slumlordish kind of situation. And I consider myself lucky, you know? And so, and I've had folks kind of interview for my house and with a prison record that, you know, the house was like, well, what if we just take this wife out? I don't know. We don't have to do that, you know? No, actually we have.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that.
I was being discreet. did your new house work out?
You were listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcast. And make sure to give us a follow over at 10canphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at 10canphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off. Hey.